Welcome to part two of our conversation with Matt Warner about famous haunts. What drove, and this is obviously, it's a question that you'd have to reiterate for someone else, but maybe you know the answer to it. Having been friends with the folks who now own the Conjuring House, what drove them to buy the house?
I think like anybody, they had an excellent opportunity to help preserve some history and further research.
Okay.
And that's exactly what they're doing. They're documenting everything that goes on there 24/7. Mm-hmm. And just trying to see what they find. And it's always active.
Because they are living in it, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the amazing part of it. It's not just a, hey, we're going to let people come in here and have these experiences. When you talked with them, when they decided, hey, we're going to get this house, and then they started settling in, what were the first signs that to them that, yeah, this is legit? Do you know what some of their first experiences may have been?
Well, I do know, because I was just talking to them about this the other day, there's what they refer to as the safe room in the house. And that's where, when they first moved in, they were staying in this one room. And Corey, the owner, was talking. And there's a door in that room, and he would lock that door with a little latch bolt. And he would say to the spirits, like, you can have the rest of the house, just please let me have this room. Don't bother me in here. And that's kind of how that was born, because the rest of the house, they would hear things. There's in the library, this one book that always pops off the shelf. They've heard, oh God, I mean, the experiences they've had there are just off the chain. They see things falling on their own all the time. They've got videos of that. They hear people walking around upstairs when there's no one in the house. You know, the typical haunted house stuff is what they hear and what they see constantly in that house. They've gotten used to it at this point now, and I think the spirits are used to them.
Yeah.
But nobody's been attacked or hurt or anything like that. So it seems like it's not evil. I would say it's not an evil presence there. That would be my surmised guess.
Sure. Is it the same presences there that were haunting it when the parents lived there?
See, that's really hard to tell. Obviously, I didn't experience what Andrea and her family experienced, so I can't say. And I'm just learning now that I've been told that I'm an empath, and I'm starting to come into it and realize it and trying to learn it. So I can feel energy. It's one of those things I was always able to walk in a room and just go, oh, it feels heavy in here. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand what that meant before. Now I get that. When I walk through that house, I don't get that heaviness in my chest, like negative feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I can't say that it is, but I'm, you know, nobody's a professional, no matter what they say in this field. We're not professionals. We're chasing ghosts. So
yep.
Some people might have longer experience, but professionalism is kind of a moot point.
Sure. It's an interesting one. I mean, obviously, a lot of these are just opinion-based questions because, like you said, none of us are experts in this. We are simply just trying to find answers, and we end up with more questions than answers, it seems, most of the time as it is.
Mm-hmm.
What, in your opinion here, what do the resident spirits of the Conjuring House feel about the home being used for investigations? And we can open that up even wider as well, beyond the Conjuring House too, but specifically that house, you know, just fear, as well known as it is. And then, you know, it kind of becomes like, hey, look at this oddity I have here. It's like almost the old day of circus sideshows to a certain extent. I mean, it's not like every random person can walk through the house, but it is, you know, it's an attraction in one way, shape or form to those who are interested in the topic. Do you think that that's a positive thing for the spirits, that they're happy that people are there trying to communicate with them? Or is it something more where they'd rather be more at peace?
I think that I'll base this answer off of my own experiences. I think that varies from location to location.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of places that I go to investigate, you'll have a couple of hours of buzzing activity, and then you just feel the whole place go flat. And it's like, all right, the ghost went to bed. They're done playing for us. I think that at some point or another, they probably get sick of putting on the dog and pony show for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thought. And I think that's the case for every location. And I can say that also, not at the Conjuring House, but I was recently at the Hinsdale House out in New York.
Sure.
There was a dark male presence there that did not like me. I was told this by some remote psychic viewers that were watching, and they were corroborating exactly how I felt. So I do believe these people. And so I think that some spirits are, they really don't want to be a part of this, and they just want to be left alone. But what I try to do when I go into these locations to put their mind at ease, if I feel uneasy, is just say, listen, I'm just here to give you a voice, preserve history, record history. I mean you no disrespect. I'm not going to stay here. This is your place. I just want to know that you're here, that kind of stuff. And most times that does help.
Mm-hmm.
I've not been attacked in a while, I guess. So
okay.
I got to be doing something right, you know?
What do you do in a case like that where you go in with best intentions and you say those things out loud and you're there meaning no harm. You're not there to provoke. You're not there to taunt or anything like that. But it still doesn't want you there. And you feel it. You know it. There's signs being given. It doesn't want you there. And you're not sure of what it is capable of. If this was a human spirit or something darker, what do you do as an investigator when you're coming across that sort of a thing? You know, it's almost like if you were walking through a field and a suspicious dog walked up to you or just kind of, you know, herded you around, but didn't come quite close enough, but you didn't know what it's capable of. Do you get the hell out of there? Do you continue on with your walk? When it's ghosts, what do you do?
So I will say, as I've gotten a little older and wiser in the field, I don't provoke whatsoever. I never was a provoke person. I don't think that's the right thing to do. Within reason, you can poke the bear, so to speak, but you don't want to walk in there and just be a jerk about it. So I've realized now that if I'm feeling things that I'm uncomfortable with, I will leave the room and try to recollect my thoughts, see if it changes. Where when I was younger, I was just going off the TV shows. I'd walk into a house, use my energy, do what you want.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many times I took an attachment home with me and spirit residual energy, and I felt like crap for like a week. So I learned that don't do that anymore because it's not smart. And this is a constant learning process for all of us. And I'm learning more things about myself with every investigation. So I now at least recognize if I'm in a place that's uncomfortable, I'm not going to keep pushing until I get pushed back. I'll take a step back, see if I can go about things differently. And if it just doesn't feel right, I'll walk away from it.
Yeah. And not keep digging. You said it's been a while since you felt that you've been attacked by a spirit.
yeah.
Take us back in time a little bit to where you felt that occurred. Paint the picture for us. Where were you? What happened? What was the experience like for you?
I'm trying to think if it was last year or the year prior. It was within the last 2 years. We were doing an event at the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast in Fall River. And I requested to have the Morse bedroom. The Morse bedroom is where Abby Borden was murdered. So we were sleeping. And I did not sleep very well. Got up the next morning, and I was getting up to go take a shower. And my girlfriend at the time noticed, she said, something's on your back. I said, what are you talking about? I had three long white scratches down the entire middle of my back. And I didn't know what happened. And that's when she was telling me that she was having these experiences all night where she kept seeing the spirit of Abby Borden next to the bed. And she couldn't talk. She was like, you know, sleep paralysis type of stuff. So I think that perhaps Abby Borden didn't like us in that room that night. And those scratches didn't last long. They were there for about a day, but I couldn't explain it.
Sure. Is there ever a time where you feel like you've been in a dangerous situation with a spirit or something on the other side where you went a step too far? Where something maybe, you know, attached to you, or you brought something back home and... like you said, like earlier, you felt like crap for a couple of days in one case. What was that like? What goes through your mind when that sort of thing happens? And is there a way, if something attaches or something like that, to really, you know, make sure you're rinsing it out and it stays away?
Yeah. Well, I'll give you the story. The first time I ever realized I had an attachment.
Mm-hmm.
I now believe that I had one when I left Waverly Hills also. When I got home from Waverly Hills, I was sick as a dog with a really bad upper respiratory, which I now believe might have been a spirit that had died of TB, given me that experience. at the time, I thought I was just overtired and what have you. But the first realization that I had an attachment, I did an event at Rolling Hills Asylum up in East Bethany, New York. And I was very new to the public eye. I had never been there before, running around in the dark, having a good time. And I remember driving home, and it's a long ride home for me. And I was driving, my ex was doing some footage review, and I had the radio on it. And she's like, turn the radio off. And I freaked out on it. I said, you don't turn the radio off, don't touch my radio. I was not acting like myself. And I could feel like such an under the surface bubbling rage towards her for absolutely no reason. We were fresh and new together, so everything was still honeymoon phase, so there was no reason for anything like that. And that whole ride home, I was miserable, and it lasted for days. And someone reached out to me and said, you know, like, I think you might have brought something home with you. And that was all new to me at the time. I had no idea what they were talking about. It's like, oh, you sound like a crazy person. I didn't bring anything home. But what I realized is when I have these attachments, it feels like you're on autopilot. It's almost like you're up above your body watching you go through the motions, but you're not fully in control, almost like a marionette. Uh-huh. And it just lifted after about 4 or 5 days. And that was the worst one I've had even to this day. I've had others since then that they usually last a day or two. But it's, knock on wood, it's been quite a while since I've had one, because now I'm aware of what I was doing wrong and aware of ways to protect myself more. It's as simple as before you leave a location, just outright saying, you know, you're not allowed to come home with me.
Sure.
You need to stay here. And that generally works. And it sounds ludicrous to even say it. But
it does, doesn't it? I mean, it's one of those things where I've been baffled by, for the many, many years of doing this, one of the things that baffled me the most when we started doing the other podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online, about 7 years ago now, we started getting calls and letters in and people sharing their experiences. And I consider myself somewhat educated on the topic. I had been in radio for 20 years, and a couple times a year I would do a ghost-themed show and do callers and such. And I'd always be interested in the topic. But I entered this world, and I've, you know, gone through, you know, tens of thousands of letters and calls now. And one of the most common ways that people keep a spirit at bay is simply asking it to stay away.
It's bizarre.
and I first thought when I read that, I'm like, oh, this is going to be rare. I'm not going to hear this much. But it's one of the most common things. And it's one of the things that I now actually tell people too. When somebody asks, like, I want this thing to leave me alone, like, did you just consider maybe just asking it like a person? I know it sounds crazy, but that seems to work more than anything else, you know, like more than getting out the holy water and the sage and everything else and bringing in the fleet of pastors and priests. Just reason with it. And that seems to do the trick more than not. But I guess that's kind of baffling to me that is the answer so many times. Is there power? And this is an opinion thing. Is there power in our words of saying that to something on the other side? Or are we overthinking it? Because are we just dealing, you know, we're dealing with something that was living once. And if someone said to you, don't get in my car when I'm driving away, you probably wouldn't get in their car when they're driving away. Is that just the simple principle they're still operating on? Or is there some unsaid, unknown force or power that we have as living people that we can gate off where they can and can't go by our will?
I've always believed that it is just treating them as if they're still a human being alive in front of us. Mm-hmm. That does it, because I bet a good portion of them don't realize that they're not alive anymore. If it's an intelligent haunt, then it should be able to interact with you and heed your words.
Yeah.
And there's no reason it shouldn't work that way. But on the same token, there very well could be power behind it. I think that we as the higher power being may be able to say, stay put. And it does work for that reason. Mm-hmm. All theories and all hypotheticals that we'll never be able to prove one way or another, but as long as they keep working for us, let's keep doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just, like I said, it's one of those that you kind of go, really? That's all there is to it? That's it? No proton pack involved? And it's like, yep, that seems to work. Let me ask you this in closing, because this has kind of been an interesting thing that I've been tackling lately with some interviews. And I've heard some very interesting stories Do you believe, is there ever a time or a place or a location that should not be paranormally investigated?
Like off limits?
Off limits, yeah. Whether it's you know, it's going to be a hotbed for stuff no matter what because of the events that transpired on those grounds. But it's not investigated. But you know, if you went there, you're likely to find something.
I have two places that come to mind right away that in my lifetime I would feel very disrespectful investigating. Mm-hmm. And whether you want to believe all the everything around it or not, and that would be obviously the 9/11, the site of 9/11.
Sure.
And the Sandy Hook shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. Those sure. are two places that I just, it would be the, in my opinion, the utmost disrespect
yeah.
to walk around with your equipment and try and contact people there. Cause it's just, it's yeah. too fresh, first of all, and it's just not right.
Yeah. I completely agree. I have never, that's the first time I've ever heard the word Sandy Hook brought into something like that, but you think of it and you're like, oh my God, I completely agree. Not a place to do investigating, but then it does make you wonder, you know, such tragic things happening to such young souls. I had someone on the show that had some amazing stories from the area where the crash of United 93 happened. Not an investigator story. This was someone who was a reporter, and this will be airing very soon on the show, that was contacted by a security officer who was working the site. Literally, they had like a trailer on the site at night to make sure people did not go scavenge the site, you know, or whatever they may do, mm-hmm. You know, of where the plane had crashed. And this is, you know, we're talking November, December of 2001. This gentleman who would be in the trailer just as a security guard at night has stories of hearing people, of seeing people, of all sorts of very, very bizarre things happening around that site. And obviously it's not a place I think anyone should go to paranormally investigate, but the stories are quite amazing of what just happened to him organically when he was there simply doing his job of guarding the location. But no, I would completely agree. I think as time passes, we're not going to hear paranormal investigation stories from a location like the ground zero of 9/11 where the trade centers were or United 93. But I think we're going to hear more and more stories from people visiting the memorials, visiting the sites and having things happen to them just as time goes on. That wraps up the second half of our conversation with Matt Warner about the many famous haunted locations that he has investigated. Check out Matt's YouTube channel, Warner Paranormal, also on Facebook. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for the support.